Hey everyone, welcome back to our podcast, Let's Talk Local, where we discuss local issues in our communities.
I'm your host, Amima.
And I'm your co-host, Khadija. Today, our topic of discussion is homelessness.
We thought this would be a good subject to discuss today, especially because we've just entered December and it's starting to snow, meaning that homelessness is becoming a much more pressing issue. Firstly, we'd like to discuss the prevalence of homelessness. So actually, a few months ago, I saw a tweet on Twitter by this woman named Alexis Isabel, and she said, "I don't know who needs to hear this, but you are significantly closer to being homeless than you will ever be to being a billionaire. Have some class solidarity and stop glorifying your oppressors." And she posted this in January, just of this year. But I thought her observation was really interesting just because of how true it is, yet how so many people act like it's not. I feel like in our society, we tend to look down on homeless people or like people with a lower socioeconomic status and the lower class, when really we can relate more to them and we're closer to being at that status than we are to ever relating to the amount of money that Bill Gates has or Jeff Bezos. Yet we glorify their status so much instead of maybe taking a look at the lower status and or the lower class and people who happen to be shelterless or homeless. And the thing is about this tweet, it did make me think a lot. Like, if I were homeless, because anything can happen. So what would I do to avoid that or to get out of the situation? And I thought that after asking that question, we should probably think about what some factors are that can cause or contribute to someone becoming homeless, and that can push people into situations where they would have no shelter. And they're never in the person's control. It's really our capitalistic society that is so focused on money, where if you don't have money, your whole life can change. Society has developed to the point where our lives are literally centered about our socioeconomic status and how much money we have. It's all about the money, right? So I think it's definitely our society that is to blame for the growing homeless population in Canada, and not the individual that we've socialized people to blame. It's like a self-blaming thing in our society where we want to victim blame and blame people who are homeless for being homeless, when really we should be looking at all these other factors that contribute to it.
No, I completely agree with you on that one. And it's, you know, there was this thing I wanted to bring up. I don't think that we can ever understand life from their perspective. Sure, we can try to understand the situation and we can try to help them out, but I don't think from the situation that we are in and we're living peacefully in our homes, I don't think that we'll ever be able to understand their life. Also, homelessness is a source for like a bunch of other issues.
Yeah.
For instance, it leads individuals to be criminalized. Yet, we do not realize there are circumstantial factors that lead to these individuals committing a crime. For example, our justice system tends to look at facts and evidence. Like, for the most part, that's the case. And they tend to overlook situational and circumstantial factors. We need to understand that they're human beings, just like everyone else. And they need food for survival. Now, back in high school, I learned about Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yep.
And one of the basic factors, the basic human needs are shelter and food. You have already taken away shelter from them. Mm-hmm. Now, all they need is food. Literally, they're fighting to stay alive at this point. But I think we don't realize that. As people who have a shelter, who have food on the table, we don't realize that. But if that too is not provided to them, for example, like food, like I said, if that too is not provided to them, then they resort to stealing. And I'm not trying to normalize theft or robbery, but I'm just trying to put into perspective for people that these individuals go through a lot, and our government needs to realize this. And there needs to be more that needs to be done. That's what I'm trying to say here.
Mm-hmm. The thing about that is not addressing homelessness. Like, when officials, government officials, municipality officials, when they neglect social issues in our communities, but especially homelessness, they are only creating more social problems in their area. Like you said, homelessness is the root of more issues. It just causes more crime, more violence.
On top of that, it's not just harmful to society, but they're also putting themselves at harm because a lot of teen pregnancies take place around homelessness.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to survive a lot of people indulge, I don't want to start on a whole other topic, but a lot of people tend to indulge in sex trade. That's how they create money for their food. Mm-hmm. And they're not only putting themselves at risk, but they're also putting others at risk because there are a lot of factors for contracting a lot of diseases. It's like you said, it's a whole other issue. And there are a lot of issues that come from homelessness, and we definitely need to address it.
Yeah. Like, and when you mention like sex work, it's not necessarily consent. We're not talking about consensual sex work. You know, we're talking about human trafficking and forced sex work. We're talking about child prostitution. If they're under 18, if they're teenagers and they're just trying to get by, because there's a large population of youth that are homeless in Canada, right? And it's not only that, but when you're homeless, you're in an environment that allows for more drug use as well, because you're surrounded by it, right? So I'm not saying that homeless people tend to be drug addicts. That's not what I'm saying. But usually drug addicts do tend to become homeless just because, again, money, right? They use it to fill their addiction.
I agree. And I don't want to go too much into this issues just because it's going to take us away from our main topic. But I also want to say that last year I was listening to this documentary that was documented on homeless people in Chicago, and there are a lot of them. And I remember this one part just got stuck in my head, where this person was saying that a lot of these people are actually pretty nice. And this one guy became homeless because he lost his everything in one night. He lost his family, he lost his money. He lost his house.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what was the reason behind it, but you have to understand, for someone going through that much stress and being that much overwhelmed, you're not able to get yourself out of it. And what's the end result? You're homeless. A lot of these people are actually nice. And if you try to like understand their perspective, you might get to know a different side of their story, you know?
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about that later on as well. Like talking to actual homeless people rather than just looking at statistics on a government website. Okay. Next, we want to look at homeless issues across Canada. So let's look at the Maritimes, New Brunswick. I'm actually from New Brunswick. I was born in Moncton, and Moncton is a large city. I mean, Fredericton is the capital, so it's not as big as Fredericton, but it's like the next big city. And Moncton actually has a growing homeless problem to this day. And it's actually pretty prevalent. When I grew up there, I was born in 2002, right? So, and I stayed there until I was 9. So from 2002 to 2011, throughout my experience, like of going to school there, going to grocery stores with my mom, like the homelessness issue was pretty prevalent. It was very obvious. Well, Moncton in general and New Brunswick in general has a lot of social issues that you can actually see for yourself, especially the homelessness issue. I remember it being a big deal, even though I was just a kid. Kids notice these things too. Sometimes it flies over their heads, but when it's to this extent, children do notice them. So actually recently in November of this year, the Moncton City Council actually voted to give over $6 million to affordable housing initiatives over the next 3 years. And they said that the money was going to come from reserves and was going to delay other capital projects. They actually asked for provincial help. This is like a new unique situation where a municipality like Moncton actually reaches out to its provincial government or the government of New Brunswick to help them address such a problem. Like, it's that big. Nearly 200 people in Moncton are actually known to be homeless, and 40% of households actually pay more than 30% of their income just on housing. So like, this kind of hits a little home for me because I'm from there. I literally grew up there. My childhood was spent there. And I'm honestly so happy to see that the government is actually trying to do something now. And I'm so proud of Moncton, my hometown, of actually being one of the first municipalities in history to go up to the provincial government and like step up and say, you know what, we need help with this issue. Please help us out. And the provincial government actually did do something.
Yeah, no, it's really good to see our government trying to do something, because again, we do realize that it's a systemic problem and it takes a lot of effort to change a whole system. But taking, you know, baby steps towards it always helps. So I actually want to talk about Montreal, Quebec. According to a headcount taken last spring, about 6,000 people visibly living on streets in Quebec. And almost half of those are in Montreal alone. So there was this quote that I found from Quebec's health minister, Danielle McCann, and she, is it a she or he? I don't know.
It's a she.
Okay. And she said, for the first time, this exercise has made it possible to count those living in homelessness and to profile them from several angles. However, I don't see any actions being taken. And I don't want to sound rude towards the government, but there needs to be more research. And more than that, there needs to be a systemic change. So this is what I mentioned before as well. I understand that it's not easy for a whole system to change, but when we can start providing more shelter homes for such individuals and shelter homes that uphold their needs. Because as we know, a lot of people are not happy with the system and the system that's in place as of now. So we need to look at their preference, not just what's good for us.
Yeah, and just looking at this, a head count, does that mean that they went physically and counted every single head? Because that's obviously going to be inaccurate. It seems like exactly. Montreal doesn't really, like, not to hate on Montreal, and you said not to be rude to the government, but... Like, okay, we're here, we're not trying to criticize necessarily in a bad way, but we just want to point some stuff out. It doesn't seem like they conducted enough research on their homeless population and even tried to look into what the homeless population wants from the government, what help they need, what help they want versus what help they don't want and what services they don't see as beneficial or even as they see flawed. So let's look into homelessness more specifically in Ontario. Let's start out with Ottawa, our country's capital. It's actually known to have a huge homelessness problem. And people try to hide it because Ottawa is, like I said, the capital of Canada and what would be called or referred to by other countries as our show-off city for international officials. And the thing is, personally, I went to Ottawa as well, and I made sure, like, before I went to Ottawa, that when I get there, I was paying attention, really. Like, obviously, when we went there, I just went on a trip with my family. We love to see all the federal and political buildings, the embassies, loved seeing the parliament, right? But all those buildings are in downtown. When you walk a little bit away from downtown, boom, you see the homelessness issue. It's right there in front of you. It's so prevalent there. They try to hide it, and they try to, and countries in general, like large cities usually, because large cities always have social problems that are very prevalent. They always try their best to brush their social issues under the rug, especially for tourists, but those lumps showed through. And the thing is, the Ottawa Mission, which is like some sort of organization, they called for government help all the time, actually, because for 3 straight years they've been operating at more than 100% capacity in all their shelters. And actually, the Ottawa Mission CEO Peter Tilley actually said that homelessness here in Ottawa and across our community has reached epidemic levels, and he said that in October. Here are some statistics for you. 36,000 Ottawa renters are actually spending more than 30% of their incomes on rent. So we saw earlier 40% of citizens in Moncton were spending more than 30% of their incomes on rent. This is 36,000 Ottawa renters. And the thing is, Ontario is lifting its ban on evictions recently as well, which is honestly pretty troubling considering the pandemic and unemployment rates, how they go hand in hand, really. So the margin is getting even thinner. And that's such an issue because instead of solving the homelessness problem, we're creating more of it. We're just increasing the numbers. The Ottawa City Council declared this as a homelessness crisis back in January before the pandemic because there were 1,900 people, almost 2,000 people, including children, sleeping in local shelters. And this number has only doubled of, like, people sleeping outdoors, I mean. It's only doubled ever since March because of the pandemic, unemployment rates going up, and then, of course, evictions going out. In general, because again, like we mentioned at the very beginning of our podcast, it's December, starting to snow, weather's very cold. There's been a 10% increase in shelter usage throughout the winter months anyway.
Yeah, you know, honestly, that's really horrifying almost because, as you said, that number doubled, and it concerns me because if that number is doubling, then I don't think anything, or if there is anything that's being done, it's working. It's clearly not working.
Yeah.
I want to come to Toronto. So, as another big city, it obviously has a homelessness problem. And I've been to Toronto like maybe 5, 6 times.
Really? I go
Yeah,
there
no,
all
I
the
haven't been
time.
there much. I haven't been there
Oh.
much. But even I've seen it. Like, if you were to walk around the streets and go even go grocery shopping, you can see the problem that's happening there.
Yeah, it's very true.
And so, and on one of our Instagram pages, it's called at CF underscore T. It's announced a few weeks ago in late November that the city of Toronto has closed down their Parkdale community fridge. So a lot of people may not know or may know, but this fridge is used by a lot of individuals. Some put stuff in the fridge for to help homeless people. You know, it's for a good use.
Yeah.
But the city's bylaw officers independently inspected the fridge and contacted the landlord with a 24-hour notice to remove the fridge. Now, why did they do that? It's because apparently it was a safety concern for children because they may get trapped inside the fridge. I do want to mention the refrigerator opens from the inside, so there shouldn't be any problem.
And the thing is, most modern fridges open from the inside.
Exactly. And my point is, if it was a safety hazard, then they should have done something. They should have had like an alternative measure, not just take it away. Like, it's a helpful resource for a lot of individuals. And just because it's a safety issue for some and for kids, I'm not saying, you know, to not take it away because they seem it as a safety issue, but take it away when you have an alternative measure in place. Because having to take it away and not putting anything in place, it's ridiculous to me because it was helping a lot of people, and now you just, I don't know, like a lot of hope was lost. It might be a little piece of object to a lot of people, but a lot of hope was lost, in my opinion.
Yeah, the thing is, like, with community fridges in general, like, especially with winter coming and the pandemic, with Toronto especially in lockdown as a huge city with a lot of cases, the community fridge was used like daily, like all the time. Everyone, it was so beneficial and it was used by so many people. But like you said, they didn't even offer an alternative. Actually, the people that run this Instagram account, the Community Fridges Toronto, they said that they even offered to replace the fridge with a smaller one. So it's not as much of a nuance, because really, is it really a safety concern or is it more of a nuance to citizens, right? City
Right.
Council probably thought it was a nuance to tourists. So that's why they probably told them to get rid of it. Because, like you said, the bylaw is ridiculous. It doesn't even apply to the situation. So they're just trying to push something that doesn't need to be shoved. So they even offered an alternative to have a smaller fridge and they denied that as well. So right now, actually, if you go to their Instagram account and you check out this post of theirs, they're looking for a new owner or a new location host in Parkdale, Toronto, to have a new community fridge on private property. So if you're interested in that, you can check out their Instagram account and email them. All right, so next we want to look into homelessness near Laurier's campuses. So, for example, Waterloo, Kitchener, and Brantford. I'm from Waterloo, and it's actually known that downtown Kitchener has a bit of a homeless problem. Actually, earlier this year, like in March, the YMCA in Kitchener set up their gym to provide as like a sort of short-term shelter for people who were homeless. And it was mainly because of the pandemic. I actually have a friend that worked there at the Kitchener YMCA, and she said that her boss didn't actually tell her or any of her other coworkers, like any other employees, that they were doing that initiative. They just laid them off and they paid them like 70 to 60% of their average earnings over the time that they turned their gym into like a homeless shelter. But the employees weren't really part of it at all. And my friend said that she's not even sure if it was like the government workers that were in charge of this initiative, but she knows for sure it wasn't the staff that was in charge of it. So the thing that kind of bothers me a little bit is that this is the first time the Kitchener YMCA has ever done this before. So the only reason that they started doing this, even though they had the capacity and they were able to do this for years and years, and we're so happy that they're doing it now, but the only reason why they are finally opening up, or now they closed it, but they closed down their YMCA and opened up the gym as a shelter for homeless people, is due to the COVID-19 pandemic. It seems like government officials see people who are homeless not as like a separate issue that should be treated regardless because it's a social problem that is affecting our society, but rather as a nuance, and like they're just a group of COVID-19 carriers that need to be isolated and properly sheltered just for the purpose of saving or putting the upper and middle classes safety first, or only making sure that the homeless people are safe to ensure the further safety of the upper and middle class.
Yeah, no, I think you do have a point there, because see, in my opinion, if the government had considered the factor of the homelessness issue, then this would have happened way back. Not right now due to COVID. So I definitely agree with the fact that like they are seen as carriers of the COVID-19. And the only thing with me is that I'm thinking, if they are isolated into this facility, then suppose one of them do end up contracting COVID, you know, what's going to happen to them?
They did have the mattresses separated like 6 feet, but at the same time, you're right. Like, it's an enclosed environment. If one of them were to contract COVID, I wonder what that would do to the stigma.
Exactly. They're just going to be, you know, like, I'm sure if we have thought of this, and other people have thought of this as well, that to see homeless people as carriers of a COVID-19, and if that happens, then that stigma basically becomes true. And it's none of this will be their fault. Actually, I want to talk about Kitchener Homeless Camp evicting a lot of individuals. It has been known that they'll be moving their residents to Redison Hotel. Some of them are being moved to motel in Cambridge. And there are others that are being facilitated at different shelter and some transitional living. There are some individuals who are choosing to find shelter outside of the region just because, again, as we said, they do not feel comfortable in the system. And why is that? See, we need to address these issues, because if these shelters are made to help homeless people, then why aren't they the one feeling safe there? See, these little questions, these little instances, if they are brought to our attention, then what is stopping the government from looking into these issues? Yeah. Like you said, the government is for the middle class and the upper class, and the homeless individuals are nothing. I'm very sorry to be that straightforward and mean towards this issue, but it needs to be addressed.
Yeah, I also find it ridiculous how, like, a homeless camp was terminated. That's why they got evicted to begin with. And when those people who got evicted said, I'm not going to do what you say, and I'm not going to be moving into these hotels that you're displacing me into, because I think the system is corrupt. I think the system is flawed and is working against me. If these people who are being evicted are saying that, and then the Waterloo region has the nerve or the guts to rebuttal that and say, hey, we're committed with community partners to offer alternative housing. That's literally what they said in an article. Instead of addressing their concerns and saying, you know what, maybe we should fix this and this, or asking that certain individual that has a problem with the system, okay, well, what do you want us to do better? They just got defensive about it.
Exactly. I don't even think they have the right to justify, because exactly what are you justifying? Like, you are there in place to help these individuals. If you're not able to meet that point, then what exactly are you justifying?
Exactly.
It's ridiculous to me at this point. Like, some of the issues that we talk about in our podcast, and when I personally think about it, even if we don't have all the facts, even if we have general information, it's ridiculous to me how our government is not able to see these issues while we're able to.
Yeah. Or the thing is, at least they see the issues, but they choose to ignore it because they think there's other bigger things to be dealing with. And that's the thing, like, a lot of people in general, like, this is a bit off topic, but a lot of people in general are just like, why isn't the Canadian government working on this and this issue and this and this issue in some other country, in China, in Pakistan, and like, why aren't you doing anything about Kashmir, about the Palestinian conflict? It's not even a conflict, it's literally just the Israel government being corrupt. But anyways, and then people are like criticizing the government. But at the same time, the government's just like, okay, but we can't be everyone's savior. We have to focus on our own problems. At the same time, that's on a federal level. Let's look at it like a municipal level. Homelessness is such a big issue, but they're not addressing it head on. And I want to think that it's probably because they're addressing other things that they're not necessarily being completely open to the public about. But there's just, in terms of politics and government and laws and policies, there is so much to address. And everyone wants the government to address a different thing. And at times it can be overwhelming for government workers because they're just like, okay, I don't know what to do. Like, which problem do we start with?
Right. And, you know, there was this thing that you said just now that the government has, maybe they have like, you know, much bigger issues to look at. I'm just wondering here that maybe it's not that they have much bigger issues to look at. Rather, they choose to look at certain issues that address certain individuals. For example, the middle class or the elite class. See, why? Because these homeless people don't have a voice. Who's going to listen to them? Nobody. But we have a way to go around the system and make our voice heard. See, it might be that issue. I don't know. Yeah. But
no, I think you're right. There's definitely some sort of classist and elitist aspect that goes into government decisions. They put the poor last. Okay, another thing that happened in Kitchener, they opened up this facility called the House of Friendship to shelter homeless people. And they took up their residency at the Radisson Hotel in Kitchener at the start of the pandemic, again, because of the pandemic. And the thing is, this goes back with crime again. So residents and surrounding businesses around the Radisson Hotel were really happy that obviously the government was taking action to address the homelessness issue in Kitchener. However, some businesses saw this as a headache. So actually, the Grill Burger Kitchen in Kitchener had damaged windows after the installation of the House of Friendship in Radisson. And they said that, you know what, we're happy that officials are doing something, but at the same time, this has driven customers away. And we had to call the police a few times. Like we said at the very beginning, when you don't fix the problem right away, it causes more problems. So homelessness creates crime or adds to it. And that makes neighbors feel uncomfortable and makes them want to push them further away. It also pushes the narrative that the homelessness issue in Canada in general is seen more like a nuance, once again, to citizens rather than a social problem that maybe everyone should support officials to address and take on as a community. Moving on to Brantford, I was actually told on three different occasions that there is a highly prevalent homeless population around Laurier's Brantford campus. Like, I'm serious. It's literally three different times. The first time I've heard about this, some guy posted about it on his Instagram story. The second time, it was a friend of mine who lives on one of the residence buildings on Brantford's Laurier campus. And the third time, I was talking to a group of students that were like third years and fourth years. And they actually also told me that Laurier has a penalty for students who cause a disturbance to or among the homeless population in Brantford. They even told a story about how they've had friends who ended up having to do community work or like volunteer hours.
Oh, wow.
As part of the penalty and the school's rules, because they've actually run into an incident with a couple of people who are homeless nearby. So although municipality officials do try to hide these problems, you can still see them. And that just shows that you really need to start solving them because these issues aren't going to disappear on their own. Recently, Brantford, like all these other cities that we've talked about, have started emptying hotel rooms for homeless people as shelters. And again, their main purpose and their reasoning for doing this is because of COVID, because they understand that when you don't have a home, it's very hard for you to quarantine, to self-isolate, to wash your hands, stay hygienic, and social distance. So they're providing them with homes and shelters now. But again, are they saying that they weren't going to do anything if COVID wasn't a big deal? Were they just going to neglect this and not do anything? Unless, like, did it really take a pandemic for them to do something about the homeless situation?
Yeah.
Right? To actually help shelter members in their own community?
Yeah, no, I agree. Like we mentioned previously, this matter should be discussed regardless of COVID. But I suppose that COVID did do some good regarding this issue. I also want to mention how Brantford has recently received about $1.9 million in provincial funding to help address their large homelessness problem and improve their emergency shelter system. But the question comes up, would this still help if there wasn't a pandemic?
Yeah, so we see the same narrative repeating itself over and over again. It seems like all these efforts would be non-existent if the pandemic didn't exist. Or pre-COVID times. And that's just extremely disappointing that it took something so large that affects the middle and upper class to help the lower classes and the shelterless, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually want to talk about the new affordable housing as well that developed in Brantford. And it aims to help those who are currently homeless or living in poverty. So far, there have been really good feedback. So it can be seen that, yes, government is helping, but at the same time, I think obviously I do appreciate, and I'm sure everyone else appreciates, these steps being taken to help and address their homelessness issue. But I also feel that we need to look at more as to what they want rather than what's convenient for the government.
Yeah, like we talked about earlier how there were some people who were evicted in Kitchener from their camp, and they said they don't trust the system. They think the system is flawed and corrupted. And we see that some people actually like the system. They like what the government's doing. So some people like it and some people don't like it. But the system is still not 100% perfect. If people who were previously homeless yet still could afford to live in the new affordable housing development, if they're okay with it, but then people who literally just got evicted from what was their home have complaints about the system is still flawed. It doesn't matter. If the top 50% are okay with it, but then the bottom 50 aren't, you still have an issue that you need to address and fix.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah, like we mentioned, it's like it's a systemic corruption almost, but obviously to address that, it's gonna take a lot of time. We do appreciate that the government does, to some extent, they do involve, but it needs to be a lot more widespread.
Definitely. I wanted to move on and talk about what we as students can do to help with this. So we understand that there's not much we can do other than donate, but one thing that all students can do and make an effort to do is just be careful and remain sensitive to these issues when it comes to our daily language and our slang. So for example, words like hobo and crackhead, you know, I've heard those
before, yes.
So many times, I've heard them so many times, and at times I understand if, say you want to call yourself a crackhead just because, I don't know, you drank 5 cans of Red Bull this morning, right? And I, you're like, oh, I have crackhead and I don't care, right? Like, that's fine. But when people actually use the word and the term crackhead and hobo to describe people who are struggling with these social issues that they don't really know about, you know, it comes off as almost classist and pretty disgusting, not gonna lie. Like, I was talking to a group of students once and way back in September, and I haven't really spoken to them again because I just hated their vocabulary. They were talking about their experience living near Brantford due to the Laurier campus that's there, and they kept referring to people who were homeless and people who were struggling with addiction nearby. They were calling them like hobos and referring to them as crackheads, and I just hated that because it's so dehumanizing, and it's like they're desensitized to the social issues around them. It's almost counterproductive to use these terms when it comes to our initiative for community involvement to help tackle this homelessness issue in our communities. The first step that we can all take is to just be more careful and more sensitive, because although it's true that a lot of people are too sensitive these days on the media, you know, and there's that term that goes around, snowflake, this isn't that. We're saying that there's a desensitization issue among the youth right now, and especially students, and that's beginning to become a problem.
Yeah, no, I agree. Another thing that we can do is stop believing everything you see on the media. I feel like the media stigmatized these individuals, these homeless people, to look as though they're criminals. And of course, as we know, the media likes to spice things up as always, but we need to show, like you said, a lot more sympathy towards these individuals. I'm not sure if like anyone here, Ramema, you might have like, you know, had a conversation with the homeless person. Whenever like we're on the highway and they're like around the exit area.
Yeah.
Like my mom and I would like, you know, usually give them either like a McDonald's coupon, like, you know, where you get the free coffee from or anything else. They are super, super nice. Like
they're so nice.
They'll be saying, oh, God bless you. And yes, there may be a point where they're like, you know, they're just thanking you because you helped them out. But no, they're genuinely that nice. That's what that's what I feel like. So even just a small token, like even like $5 or like a coupon or something like that can help them out a lot. It might not be that useful to you, but it can help them out a lot. So always try and show a little bit of sympathy towards these individuals when you see them. And rather than brushing it off, try help them out. Like, yeah. I'm not saying you have to, but try it out.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah, it's a nice experience talking to them, right?
Yeah.
This kind of goes back to the self-blaming thing I was talking about earlier with the media stigmatizing these individuals to look at like criminals. In this society, it's like an arrogant society. Everything, people think that everything that you build your career is 100% on you. And if you went through school, that's a good job on you. If you didn't go to school, that's bad on you. Why didn't you? We naturally don't consider money, finances, family situations. We don't consider that. If someone's educated, we say, wow, good job. That was on you, 100% you. And then when someone's on the streets, they're like, that was also 100% you. When that's not ever the case. Right?
Yeah.
It's just never the case, both ways.
Agreed. I mean, a lot of us didn't even care about money until we got to university and found out that we're going to have to pay.
True. Yeah.
You know?
Student loans is a whole different thing, isn't
it? Yeah. So think about it this way. Like, as a student, you're concerned, you're stressed about how you're going to pay off the student loan. And when like a lot of our parents are like at a good point, we as students try to support our parents by working and everything, but these individuals, they have nothing. And think about it like that. Like, as students, if you're worried about that money factor, then these individuals have not even considered about money factor, clothing factor, environmental factor, financial factors. There's so many things they have to worry about. So if lending a hand sometimes here and there can help them out.
Yeah, exactly. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about the idea of classism again, because we were talking about talking to people who are homeless and all that. I was looking at this one article that this one journalist wrote on forbrant.com. Her article is called They Have a Voice. And I find it really interesting what she writes on the first page. This is what she writes. Too long have the homeless been constrained to that image of a shadow. No voice, no face, no future. I want to see how they live. Who are they? Those homeless people we try to avoid and judge them, but we truly don't understand. We fear too much and ask questions from a safe distance. We discuss them with social services and or friends and family in the comforts of our homes or offices. Where is their voice? What do they have to say? And I was thinking, is this a potentially classist idea? I don't want to get hate, but it just reminded me so much of this one book I read in high school. It's a French book. It's called No et Moi, and that means no and me in English. So the book takes place in France. There's this middle class 13-year-old girl named Lou. She's gifted, and she had this exact same thought. She wanted to know why people were homeless, how they ended up homeless, and she wanted to help them. France has a huge homelessness problem as well, so the book kind of centers around that. Lou befriends a woman who's homeless. Her nickname is No in the book, and No is 18 years old, so she's barely she's just an older teenager, really. I don't think 18-year-olds should be considered fully grown adults.
Yeah.
You know, they're really just older teenagers, aren't they? And the thing is, Lou befriends No, and she tries to help her out because No has, like, a drug addiction. She's on the street. She has no money. She can't keep a job. And Lou tries to help her in every single aspect, Even in terms of shelter, she gives her place in her own home after asking her parents. And at the end of the book, they're both waiting at a train station because they decide that they both want to travel to another city in France to visit a friend of No's. And No tells her, you know what? Give me the cash for the train tickets. You wait here. I'll be right back. So Lou gives her a couple of euros because, again, this is France. And No goes and she's going to get the tickets. And Lou waits and waits and waits, and as you can guess, No one ever returns. And that's how the book ends. So I was pretty shocked when I finished the book, but at the same time I was like, well, because of course there was foreshadowing.
I feel like the book kind of gave way to a new stigma that you can't trust homeless people.
The thing about the book is I loved it. It was one of my favorite books. And the reason why is because they try to debunk every single stereotype against homeless people in that book. Like they mention, you know what? This is what happened to No. She's had such a tragic, like I don't even want to mention it because of trigger warnings and all, but she's had a pretty tough life and that's why she's there. And if you think about it, it's like every person that is on the streets is there because of something that they couldn't control in their life beforehand. Of course, not every homeless person is like No, right? She's just a fictional character that was made up. And she's also 18. Of course, she's going to be a little irresponsible. But the thing is about Lou, she was wondering all these things that this journalist was wondering, like, why aren't we asking questions? And if you look at it, for example, people who actually live in those cities with homeless people know that there is not just a stigma, but there is a sort of truth, even if it's to a small extent, to the stereotypes around them, like crime levels and drug issues. And that's why they don't approach them. But then people who don't grow up around people who are homeless, grow up in these cities that are a little more wealthier and with richer people, they're just like, you know what, let me talk to these people. And that's not a thought that generally crosses people's minds when they live in those big cities.
All right, so that pretty much sums up our episode for today. We talked about the prevalence of homelessness, homeless problems across Canada and Ontario and near Laurier's two campuses. We also took a look at how factors like crime, stigma, and classism affect how students view the growing issue of homelessness in our communities.
Thank you to all those listening for supporting our podcast throughout this fall semester. We hope you'll hear from us again when the winter semester starts in January. Remember to follow our Instagram page at Let's Talk Local. That's LETS.TALK.LOCAL for updates on our show. Good luck with exams and happy holidays.